Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Renny Pena, Christie's neighbor and tribal president at the time, was one of the first people to find out what happened to Christie the night she went missing. And it was all by chance. She was away on business fulfilling her duties as president of the Northern Cheyenne tribe. After a long day of meetings, she settled down in her hotel room when she picked up the phone and called Gerard's mother. They'd been planning to talk that night as part of a prayer request where the two of them would pray together. But everything changed when Gerard's mother handed the phone over to her husband.
He said that Christie didn't make it. And I was like, what do you mean Christie didn't make it? I had no clue what they were talking about. And he said, he's out here. And Gerard ran over her. And she didn't make it. And I was like, what? They said she's outside in the Suburban in the back seat. I was trying to piece things together. What is going on? Here you are telling me that Christie is gone. She's in the back seat. I mean, what, why, where, you know, what is going on?
Renny's on the phone asking him these questions, trying to understand what happened.
He couldn't talk much, and he said he couldn't say much because the cops are here. So that was just pretty much the end of the conversation.
It was true. Christie's lifeless body was in the back seat of Gerard's SUV, parked outside of his mother's house. But what Renny didn't know at the time of that phone call was that Gerard was being questioned by Bureau of Indian Affairs law enforcement after his mother called the police. With a BIA investigator recording the conversation, Gerard told officers what happened earlier that night. And this is the beginning of that interview.
My name is Special Agent Jonathan Whitefoot. I am speaking with Gerard Tuskinders. Can you spell your last name?
T-H-R-E-E-F-I-N-G-E-R-S.
Today's date is March 6th. It's roughly 10:39 p.m. Okay. So can you, you were saying that you were with the individual in your car?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you nodded your head in affirmative.
Yes.
What's her name?
Her name's Christie Rosewind. That's my mother, my kids. It's my love.
That's Christie Rose Windthigh, he said. That's my love. Throughout this episode, you'll hear the rest of Gerard's interview. Every word of it. The way Gerard laid out what happened that night would become the primary narrative around Christie's death. And while authorities investigated what happened to Christie, Alita and the rest of Christie's family say they were left in the dark for weeks, then months, not knowing exactly how Christie died or what would become of Gerard. So we retraced how law enforcement responded the night Christie was killed and the investigation that followed to see if things were done properly. From CBS News, I'm Kara Cordy.
And I'm Bo Erickson.
This is Missing Justice, Episode 3. The BIA investigation. The night Christie died, Gerard sat in the back seat of a BIA police cruiser outside of his mother's house. BIA Special Agent Jonathan Whitefoot interviewed Gerard that night. He started off by asking how Christie ended up dead inside Gerard's SUV. So Gerard described what happened earlier that night.
It's the mother of your kids. Okay, you were saying that you guys were riding around earlier and she fell out of a car?
No, we were in the house and then, like, she started fighting this other girl. And then I left because I didn't want to get fucking hit.
As you might already be able to tell, it can be difficult to understand what Gerard is saying. So I want to bring my co-reporter, Bo, in here to help break down the audio with me.
It's clear that Gerard is obviously emotional, but he's telling police that Christy got into a fight with another woman at their house, which made Gerard leave, because he said he didn't want to get hit.
And then I went around and then I sat there for a little bit. I didn't know she was like, she knocked and then she tried to hit me and I was like, nope, I just left. I locked my door and I didn't know she held onto the handle and then she was dragging it. I didn't know like she was still on there until I hit the fucking, until I fell bump. And then I turned around and I'd seen her and I grabbed her. I didn't know what to do. I just came to my mom.
Gerard said that he left the house and got into his car, but Christy followed him and tried to hit him. He says he drove away, but Christy was holding on to his door handle, causing him to drag her until he felt a bump. He then got out of the car, picked Christy up, put her in the back seat of his SUV, and drove to his mother's house.
Okay, where are you guys at?
We're in Muddy Cluster.
Muddy Cluster's whose house?
Our house.
Your house? You guys stay in Muddy Cluster?
Mm-hmm.
So, Kara, what we know now at this point in the recording and what Special Agent Whitefoot knew then was that Christy and Gerard lived in the Muddy Cluster neighborhood, and that's where he ran her over, more than 5 miles away from where they currently were at his mother's house. Agent Whitefoot then picks up on something Gerard mentioned before, that apparently a fight broke out between Christy and another woman at their home.
Okay, so you guys had a little argument, and she is fighting another girl? Who was the other girl?
Tavern Curly.
Okay.
We learned later that Tavern Curly was a friend of theirs. Christy, Gerard, Tavern, and at least one other woman spent the day together partying. Digging for more information, Agent Whitefoot continues.
And so I'm assuming alcohol was in play? Okay, so you went in your house, in your room, and locked the door?
I just went out the back door and I turned on my car and I left and then I went back around to the Muddy and I stopped right near the house and I didn't know she like came out and she like just started knocking and started being like trying to fucking like be aggressive towards me.
Again, Gerard is repeating this story about how he left the house during the fight, drove around their Muddy Cluster neighborhood, came back and parked outside. That's when Gerard said Christy exited their home, went up to the Silver Ford Explorer he was still in, and tried to open his car door. As he put it, Christy was being aggressive towards him.
I just like rolled up my window a little bit more, and then she grabbed the handle. I thought she just yanked it, then I didn't know she was hanging on still, and she was fucking like still out on it. Fucking ready to move up.
Okay.
So what we just heard Gerard tell Agent Whitefoot was that he ran Christy over. He said he was trying to protect himself from Christy, so he drove the car away and somehow ran Christy over after she apparently grabbed onto the SUV's door handle. And remember, as we listen to this audio recording, this is exactly how it was said to Agent Whitefoot. Next, the agent shifts the line of questioning to alcohol.
How much have you had to drink?
I don't know, like a couple bottles today. Then we were drinking like earlier today, but like as soon as she started being aggressive, I just left.
So what Agent Whitefoot now knows is that Gerard could have been quite intoxicated when all this went down. He admitted he drank a couple bottles of alcohol. And Kara, what's striking about Gerard's statement is that he seems to maintain this one consistent story. And Gerard's even admitting to drinking on the reservation, which he knows is illegal. Immediately after this, Agent Whitefoot turns his questions away from Gerard and focuses on something else.
Okay, so she's being aggressive towards you?
That's the only reason I left, because like, she always fucking was aggressive, and then I started to leave, and she always, then fuck, I just turned on my car and I left. I didn't, because what she was still fighting, I just headed out.
Gerard's mumbled speech gets worse, but this part stuck out to us immediately because of what we were told about Christy and Gerard's relationship. Gerard is making it sound like Christy was physically intimidating him.
which surprised us because Alita told us about how petite Christy was.
But what Gerard said, that Christy was the aggressor and tried to attack him from outside his car, this is what Agent Whitefoot continued to question.
What's your house number in Muddy?
828.
828? Okay. So that's where she fell?
She was still on there when, like, I went, like, right close to the house, and then I just parked there for a little bit. Then I was about ready, you know, head out. Then, like, she came out of nowhere, and she started knocking, and she's like, I rolled down, I was like, what? She, like, then she tried to hit me, and I was like, man, I rolled up my window, and she's like, I didn't know she was still holding on to the handle when I left. Like, I didn't know until I flew her right down, like, a little bit past, like, a couple houses down, and I didn't know, like, I fucking hit her until she fucking rolled over.
Okay.
For the third time now, Gerard admits to running Christy over. He also tells Agent Whitefoot that he didn't realize what he had done until he had driven a couple houses down the road. So that's why it's a little frustrating listening to this recording to hear what Agent Whitefoot focused on in his next line of questioning, Christy's alleged behavior.
All right, so it happened in Muddy. Did she hit you?
Earlier, yes.
Okay.
She's always fucking... I mean, I'm not fucking trying to, like...
No, I understand. But she did hit you. Okay. All right. Okay. The time is...
42.
10:42.
And that's where it ended. That was every word of Special Agent Whitefoot's recording with Gerard that night. In total, the interview lasted exactly 4 minutes.
Gerard admitted to running Christy over after drinking a lot of alcohol. And then, instead of calling law enforcement, Gerard picked up Christy's body, put her into his car, and drove to his mother's house, miles away. And yet, the BIA agent didn't ask any questions about what Gerard did after he ran Christy over, or if Christy was still alive at any point. And it seemed like the detail that Agent Whitefoot was really honing in on was Gerard's allegation that Christy was hitting him.
And by the way, there weren't any follow-up questions on that charge, like, did he ever hit her back?
And on top of that, we wondered if any officer on the scene ran Gerard's name to check for prior criminal history, which would have shown his 2013 involuntary manslaughter conviction.
Nevertheless, after that interview, BIA officers placed Gerard under arrest and took him to the local BIA police station. But the reason for his arrest might surprise you. We're going to get into that a little later. But first, let's go back to Alita and what she was doing the day after Christy died.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you can have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
After staying up all night searching Christy's house and finding her blood on the street, Alita knew Christy was dead, but knew almost nothing else. She was back at home waiting for some answers until an unexpected visitor knocked on her door.
I told her to come in, and she said, I just want to tell you it was an accident.
Gerard's mother had come to see Alita.
And then she told me what happened.
His mother also told Alita that she was watching Christy's three children that night. She said that when Gerard came to her house and confessed to running Christy over, the children were right there, playing. Alita said Gerard's mother told her she quickly gathered the kids and took them to a back room away from their father. Gerard supposedly stayed on the couch while his mother went outside to see what her son had done and quickly called the BIA. We reached out to Gerard's mother to ask about this conversation, but we never heard back from her. This was the first time Alita received any details about what happened to Christy.
When I heard that he had ran her over, loaded her up, and took her to his mom's house, it just got me mad. It was like, why didn't he take her to the clinic? Why didn't he get her help? You know, why didn't he get Christy help?
These questions kept racing through Alita's mind. And knowing what she knew about Christy and Gerard's relationship, she couldn't believe that Christy's death was an accident. Alita and her family wanted to know the facts surrounding that night. After Christy's death, Alita said one of her sisters even went around the Muddy Cluster neighborhood asking people questions because no one investigating the case was reaching out to them. It wasn't until a few days after Christy was killed that Agent Whitefoot, the officer who conducted Gerard's interview, agreed to meet with the family. At the time, they were questioning everything. All they knew was the little amount of information from Gerard's mom. They couldn't understand how Christy could have been run over outside her home. They thought maybe Christy was trying to get away from Gerard. And if it was an accident, why didn't Gerard call 911 immediately? Why would he put her in his SUV and drive across the reservation to his mother's house? These were just some of the questions they asked Agent Whitefoot, assuming he had some answers.
And he's like, I can't give you guys any information. I could try to answer questions. It's an ongoing investigation.
The family wanted to know if Christy was run over at her house in Muddy Cluster, why they didn't see any officers or police tape the night they drove to Christy's. Had anyone protected the crime scene or had they spoken to any potential witnesses?
Jonathan Whitefoot just couldn't tell us, or he wouldn't tell us any other information. He said it's ongoing investigation.
It's an ongoing investigation became a familiar and disappointing refrain in these conversations.
Did he ask you all any questions about the nature of Christy and Gerard's relationship?
No, he didn't, but we did tell him that he always beats her up and they're always fighting and they're on drugs and alcohol. And just like, he had no care in the world. He just came to see what we wanted, basically.
The family asked BIA Agent Whitefoot if they could speak to someone at the FBI. They knew that major crimes committed on tribal land was a federal offense and therefore could also be investigated by the FBI. So Alita says Agent Whitefoot told Christy's family that he would reach out to the FBI on their behalf. Altogether, Alita said the meeting lasted about 30 minutes. Agent Whitefoot gave the family his email address and told them to send him the photos of Christy's alleged abuse. We asked the BIA and the FBI if the family's retelling of these interactions were accurate. The BIA never got back to us, and the FBI referred us to the BIA because that agency investigated Christy's case.
Even with all of these unanswered questions, Christy's family had to lay her to rest. 6 days after she died, there was a huge gathering at the Catholic Church. Alita said their family was one of the largest on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, so the church was packed with loved ones. Christy lay in an open casket, and some music played while a relative read her obituary. Christy Rose Woodenthigh, mourning woman, 33 of Lame Deer, Montana, passed away on March 6, 2020. Christy loved spending time with her family and friends. She loved listening to music with her children. Christy loved all her nieces and nephews and took them as her own. Her home was always open to her family. She was very kind-hearted and was always willing to help others and lend a hand. Listed in the obituary are the 10 other Northern Cheyenne families Christy was related to. The obituary ends with this. We apologize if we have missed anyone, as our family is very large. But while Christy's family filled the room for the most part, the service was quiet.
How some funerals are, people get up and they talk and talk about memories. Nobody got up and talked. Too sad.
Christy's three young children came to the funeral. Gerard's mother brought them, and even though they were there the night he walked in and said Christy was dead. They didn't know how their mom died, or even who was responsible.
At first, the kids, when I first seen them, they said, some bad guys ran my mom over. Like during the funeral, the little girl was like, who's the bad guys that ran over my mom? She was 2 years old.
After Christy was laid to rest, her family felt justice was on the horizon. They assumed there would be a surefire indictment for Gerard. After all, even his mother said he confessed to running Christy over. But that's not what happened. And this is where it gets a little complicated. Beau had to go back and dig through the details in order to figure out what exactly went down.
According to the U.S. Marshals Service and federal court documents, Gerard was arrested the night Christy died, but he wasn't there for running Christy over. He was arrested for drinking that night, which broke the conditions of his supervised release following the prison sentence from his 2013 involuntary manslaughter conviction, the car crash that killed his ex-girlfriend. So after 3 months behind bars for this parole violation for drinking, Gerard was out again on supervised release.
None of this made sense to Christy's family because they assumed he would have to stay in jail after he admitted to running Christy over. But that wouldn't happen unless he was charged for Christy's death. And by the time Gerard was set to be released, no charge was in place.
Kind of had confidence in the police, hoping they'd arrest him. And it was just silence, like nobody came and let us know anything, nobody did anything.
So Gerard was out. No one knew if or when he would be indicted for Christy's death. And this scary uncertainty raised alarm bells, not just with Christy's family, but amongst the whole community. For Christy's family, the summer of 2020 was filled with waiting and worrying. While Gerard was out of jail, Christy's family started to feel like justice for Christy was slipping away from them. Alita said the family would call the BIA regularly for updates on the investigation and wanted to know when Gerard would be charged. But according to Alita, calls usually went unanswered. So Christy's family leaned on their community for help. Members of the Northern Cheyenne Tribal Council, the tribe's top governing body, tried in every way they knew how to deliver justice for Christy. They were holding weekly meetings with the BIA police chief. And in the summer of 2020, when Gerard was a free man, the council asked what was happening with Christy's case at every meeting.
We would ask for an update. You know, what is the update? What is the status of this case? When are things going to happen? And ongoing investigation, or I can check on it. We never really got an answer.
That's Councilwoman Deborah Charette. She represents Muddy District. Christy was one of her constituents.
We don't want our reservation to be known for you can come here and commit a crime and not have to pay.
Councilwoman Charette said she understood that the BIA couldn't tell them certain details to protect the integrity of the investigation. But she said any attempt they made to communicate with the BIA about the case was like hitting a brick wall. She worried that something was seriously wrong.
You all were suspicious that the case wasn't being handled correctly.
You know, when you get that gut feeling, when things have happened before, you don't want it to happen again.
We asked the BIA to respond to this allegation, but no one responded to our request for comment. After months of waiting, no one had been charged for Christy's death. And Rennie had had enough.
I was angry too, hearing Christy's dead. My neighbor, mother of three, living across the street from me. She's dead. Why? What happened? You're asking these questions, but you're not getting any answers.
But time ticked by, and Rennie's frustration grew.
There was no investigation. They never came and interviewed any of the neighboring witnesses.
Rennie questioned if the BIA was properly investigating Christie's case, and she feared that the chances of Gerard being charged got slimmer with every day that passed.
That's where the lack is, you know, when they investigate. They don't do a thorough job. And me, I'm like a 48 hours type of person. Get everything you can in that within that time frame. Don't leave any stones unturned. You know, I watch these programs, so why can't it happen here?
After almost 5 months without answers, Rennie's frustrations were becoming unbearable. She felt compelled to find justice as the tribe's president, but she also felt some guilt as Christie's neighbor and friend.
And that's what I felt so bad about. You know, I wasn't home when all of this was going on. Could I have saved her? Could I have intervened then? You know, I mean, I'm getting emotional.
Rennie felt like something more had to be done. She decided she needed to go outside of the reservation to place more attention on the case. Rennie had seen other cases in her community go cold too many times before and knew that something needed to change.
Okay, for Native Americans, how often do you see them on a news station being broadcasted as missing or information on their murder? You don't see that. But as soon as a non-native goes missing or there's a murder, there's just worldwide coverage on non-natives.
So with little faith in BIA investigators, President Peña wrote a letter to Washington, addressed to Montana's congressional delegation, asking for their help because Congress has oversight over the BIA. She pleaded with them to help raise awareness about Christie's case and other deaths on the reservation. She wanted the U.S. senators to start questioning what federal authorities were doing to investigate. She felt the letter was their last chance to get answers from investigators. And then, 3 weeks later,
Senator John Tester is pushing the FBI and the Bureau of Indian Affairs for answers following an increasing number of deaths on the Northern Cheyenne Indian Reservation. Senator Tester says, quote, multiple Northern Cheyenne tribal members have been found dead on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, including Christie Woodenthigh, Kaimani Littlebird, and Lonnie Flack.
In his letter, dated August 12, 2020, Senator Tester pushed the heads of the FBI and the Interior Department, which oversees the BIA, to investigate Christie's death and others on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. He wrote that it was clear that more attention and resources were necessary to properly investigate and deliver justice for the victims. About 10 days after Senator Tester sent his letter, the U.S. Attorney for Montana made a big announcement. Gerard was being indicted for the involuntary manslaughter of Christie Woodenthigh, meaning Gerard was charged with unintentionally killing Christie while driving recklessly under the influence. A few months later, Gerard pleaded guilty. He did so based on a plea agreement with the government, which said that he and the prosecution thought a sentence of 5 years probation was appropriate. No jail time.
We figured he was taking responsibility for what he did.
But that wouldn't happen. And after reviewing court documents, Bo can explain why.
In the summer of 2021, while Gerard was out on pretrial release awaiting his sentencing, he was pulled over for speeding. And during that stop, his blood alcohol level was 0.286. That's 3.5 times the legal driving limit.
You have been arrested and brought before us today, Mr. Three Fingers, because a motion has been filed alleging that you have violated the terms of your pretrial release.
So because of this, Gerard was back in custody.
And during this time, Gerard wrote a handwritten letter to the court apologizing for his violation and Christie's death. He said he couldn't describe the sorrow, regret, and tremendous loss he felt. He said he loved Christie and found himself in the dark depths of overwhelming depression. He offered a sincere apology to Christie's family and said that his main goal was being a father to his children.
Days after that letter, Gerard's attorney alleged in a filing that the reason why Gerard was pulled over that night was because Christie's family had been following him and carrying clubs. So that's allegedly why he was speeding away, because she said he feared for his safety. Gerard's attorney also alleged that twice before this incident, Christie's family engaged in violent acts against Gerard's family and attempted acts of aggression towards Gerard. And so we asked Alita about these allegations. She said that they were following Gerard the day that he was arrested because they suspected he was drunk driving and they didn't want him to get away. But Alita denied that they were carrying clubs.
But the judge could only focus on what was in the filings. So after evaluating these claims, the judge made it clear that she felt a more serious sentence, more than the 5 years probation of that plea agreement, was appropriate. After hearing the judge's intention, Gerard withdrew his guilty plea, meaning there would now be a trial, and his fate would rest in the hands of a jury. Christie's family knew it was rare that a case like this in Indian country would even make it all the way to a jury trial. They hoped it was the final step in finding justice for Christie. When the first day of the trial finally arrived, the case against Gerard seemed like anything but a sure thing. Next time on Missing Justice, Gerard goes to trial.
The court has set aside this time to hear the matter of United States versus Gerard David Three Fingers.
But his attorney quickly focuses the case away from Gerard and onto Christie.
Angry, aggressive, assaultive. Those words describe the demeanor of Christie Woodenthigh in the minutes shortly before her death.
And at the trial, Alita and her family finally find out exactly how the federal agents responded to Christie's death when they take the stand.
Now, you didn't write a report in this case, is that right?
Correct.
How will the jury rule in the case of the United States versus Gerard Three Fingers? That's next time. Missing Justice is a CBS News podcast. This episode was reported by me, Kara Cordy, and Bo Erickson. If you want to get in touch with us, email missingjustice@cbsnews.com. We wanted to thank the Northern Cheyenne people for their hospitality and for sharing their stories with us. This project was also reported and produced in part in Washington, D.C., so we wanted to acknowledge that we work from the ancestral homelands of the Anacostan and neighboring Piscataway and Pamunkey Indigenous peoples. Dr. Iris Prettypaint, a member of Blackfeet Nation and a descendant of the Crow Nation, worked with us as a sensitivity reader. She has over 45 years of experience as an educator and is a leading authority on cultural resilience with American Indian and Alaska Native communities. Steve Razies is the Executive Vice President of Podcasting and Audio at Paramount. At CBS News, Ingrid Ciprian Matthews is the Executive Vice President of News Gathering, and Mark Lima is our DC Bureau Chief. Our production partner is Neon Hum Media. At Neon Hum, our executive producer is Jonathan Hirsch. Our senior producer is Joanna Clay. Liz Sanchez is our associate producer. Stephanie Serrano is our associate editor. Original music by Asha Ivanovich. Sound design by Scott Somerville. Additional tracks from Epidemic Sound. And our fact checker is Naomi Barr. Thanks for listening.
If you like Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.